WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Happy Wednesday to you. Welcome into a new day here on the program, and hope it's starting off well for you and starting off cool. Not cool like Fonzie cool, but more cool like weather cool at 59 degrees. I'll take this every single morning. But we've got a lot that we can discuss this morning, of course, with the passing of Ozzy Osbourne yesterday, 76 years old. We are definitely going to talk about Ozzy this morning. We are definitely going to play Ozzy this morning, so I'm just going to warn you now. If you don't like Ozzy, I think I'm just going to go all Ozzy today. And I know it's early, might be a little bit too early for some of it, but we'll do the softer stuff to get us started off early, because Ozzy did have a varied career. I mean, for being the godfather of heavy metal. There were songs that you could hear on, you know, light rock stations these days, like "Mama, I'm Coming Home." You could play that on light rock stations. "Road to Nowhere." There's songs that I think I wouldn't say defy genre, but certainly when you hear it, you say, "Well, that's not what I thought Ozzy was something different." And I'm sure for many people, especially people who came about after, you know, the heyday of Black Sabbath, people my age and younger, you know, they hear all these stories about Ozzy. And then in 2002, the Osbournes hits MTV and you're like, oh, he's just a funny old dad. It's also weird to think Ozzy was only like 5 years older than I am now when he started that show. He was my age when they started doing the Ozfest tour. He was younger than me when he first tried to retire from music. So, yeah, it kind of puts things in perspective. Plus, you know, obviously, I didn't live the same hard life that, hard partying life that Ozzy did. But that show, in doing that show, which of course was, you know, Sharon Osbourne's doing, she was the one that got everything going with that and helped to reinvigorate the Ozzy brand, but also to introduce it to entirely new generations of people. I mean, how many people became fans of his music because they liked the TV show? And with a lot of reality programs, and of course, you know, there weren't a lot of celebrity reality programs before the Osbournes. They were one of the first ones to do this, to say, let's bring cameras in. And of course, it was, you know, not 100% authentic, as no reality show is. And when I say that, I mean, you know, some things are staged for the cameras in the sense that, oh, that funny thing that you just did, go back out there and do it again. I mean, they let the things that happen organically, but they might, you know, they might need a different angle. They might need a bigger reaction from someone. So there's a little bit of dramatizing reality. But that show gave America and the world the chance to see, like, oh, this guy's not the Prince of Darkness. That's just gimmick. Like, he likes to play with his dogs and sit with his cats and watch TV. He loves to watch the History Channel. He drinks Diet Cokes. And that introduced them to a whole new audience. It was a smart move on their part to take part in it, but also kind of set the tone for how reality TV would look at celebrity families. And for people who say, well, were they really like that, or was that just for the cameras? No, they were really like that. I mean, Jack Osborne is a paranormal investigator now, so we run in the same circles, and people always will ask him that question. You know, like, was your family really like they were on TV? And they were exactly like that. The only difference is they had an older sister who I guess also lived in the house at the time that they just shot around because she didn't want to be on TV. But we can talk about Ozzy's music. We can talk about the Osbournes. We can talk about all of the ways that they have kind of capitalized on that success over the years. I mean, Sharon Osbourne has her own TV career now. Kelly and Jack have gone on to their careers. Amy, I guess, you know, her band didn't take off as her music career didn't take off as much as she had hoped, but also we can talk about the news that came out yesterday regarding the Gabriel House fire in Fall River. They had, there was two press conferences yesterday. Governor Healey came in the morning and announced that the state was giving money to the city of Fall River to help increase its complement of emergency personnel. And I popped on with Barry a little bit to give him the news about the later press conference in which they determined, narrowed down the causes of the fire itself. And we talked a little bit about, you know, what Governor Healey pledged to Fall River and how much of a difference that could actually make. Because as we know, there's been discussion about whether or not there's enough firefighters. They're running 3 personnel for every apparatus. The national standard is 4. Or the recommended national standard is 4. And they're trying to increase that. They talked about increasing that. Part of the problem is they're not getting enough overtime out of their firefighters. So Governor Healey has pledged $1.2 million to Fall River to help with this issue. But this is just kind of a temporary fix. You know, the city needs to figure out how to keep that going and sustainable going forward. I think it's going to be hard when budget time comes around next year for Fall River to say, yeah, let's cut the fire budget. I think you're going to see widespread support for increasing their budget because, unfortunately, something like this could happen again. Now, in terms of it happening in an assisted living facility, well, the state is going to be working to update guidelines and requirements. The investigation continues into what exactly went on at Gabriel House. But what they have been able to determine is, first of all, they've ruled the fire accidental. They don't think that there was any intentional fire set. And State Fire Marshal John Devine was able to give some insight into the process of trying to figure out a cause. So because the person whose room the fire started in perished in the fire, they couldn't interview that person to find out, you know, what exactly happened. So they just have to go with what the evidence shows them. And the evidence shows them that it could be one of two things, because there was an oxygen concentrator in the room, which is that machine that takes the oxygen out of the tank and removes like nitrogen from the air and makes it so you can breathe the oxygen. And so there was one of those in the room, and there was also discarded smoking materials in the room. And it could have been either one of those, either a fault with the oxygen concentrator or smoking next to the oxygen that could have caused this issue. And as of right now, the fire has to be considered undetermined because due to the process and the procedure for investigating a fire, if they can't narrow it down to just one particular cause, it has to remain undetermined. So it's undetermined at this time, but that may change. Fire Marshal Devine said he did not think that, well, he said he wasn't sure that they would be able to narrow it down any more than they have already. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Tim, I normally wouldn't do this, but for a point of clarification, I have friends in our fire department in Fall River for many years. So two of their nine trucks had four. Devin only had three.
Right, so there were still...
When you said three, it sounded like if somebody listening didn't know that all their vehicles...
Okay, so thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
At least two more, and then they're going to try to add more.
All right, thank you for that.
Yep.
And because they can't determine from two things what might be true, it will remain undetermined. And that's... That can be a bit of an issue going forward with insurance claims and things like that, but at least being able to narrow it down to these two things kind of help gives closure, but also points to what needs to be handled in the future. If this was a faulty oxygen concentrator, that's concerning because then that becomes, well, you got to talk to the manufacturer. You got to find out if this was some sort of fault on their end. Was this being used improperly? And things that they might not get the answer to. Obviously, if it's discarded smoking materials or if it's somebody smoking next to the oxygen tank, you know, those are things that are a little bit easier to address in the sense that why was anybody smoking in the room to begin with? And that was one of the questions that was asked of DA Tom Quinn. Do they allow smoking in those rooms? And he didn't give an answer to that question. He was also asked if they thought that charges maybe if he thought that charges may be filed at a later date. And he did not answer that question. So I don't know, you know, would that be that someone was at fault for the way that they allowed the facility to be run? I guess we'll have to wait and see as the investigation continues. But here's the thing about it. I think we've all known somebody who was a smoker, who was on oxygen, and who still smoked. And the Fire Marshal Devine said multiple times, you know, first of all, nobody should be smoking. But he also said, you know, you shouldn't be smoking in places where there's oxygen. And I know that that's tough because if you live in this facility and you want to smoke in your room, you're not on oxygen. Well, you're still close enough to somebody that does have an oxygen tank. And it just makes it far too dangerous. I mean, my grandfather was on oxygen at the end of his life. And he'd be upstairs in his bedroom smoking with the oxygen tank in the room. But even if he wasn't smoking, everybody else was downstairs smoking. And I worried constantly about that. And it turns out after he and my grandmother both passed away, there was a fire in the house, but it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with it was an electrical fire. There was an extension cord under the living room rug that had been plugged in the 50s that nobody remembered was under there. And after years and years and years and years of people walking over it and vacuum over it and moving furniture over it, it finally frayed enough, plugged in, that it set the carpet on fire and then the house burned down. But anyway, still many, many questions to be answered. But at least we can say that it was accidental. 508-996-0500. I've got to take a break here. We'll be back in a few moments.
a large meth bust at LAX, a rabies outbreak in New York, and sophisticated phone scammers in Florida.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Customs and Border Protection is touting its recent interception of hundreds of pounds of methamphetamine. According to the federal agency, nearly 300 pounds of the highly addictive stimulant was found hidden in a shipment of solar panels at Los Angeles International Airport. The shipment was heading for New Zealand, and officers were flagged based on prior intel, which allowed agents to intercept the drugs before they were exported. Parts of New York State are declaring rabies a public health threat following a resurgent in rabid animal cases for the first time since 2016. Health Commissioner Dr. Irina Gelman's declaration comes after three feral cats and 22 raccoons tested positive for rabies in the past year.
They are indicative of widespread rabies in terrestrial animals north, south, east, and west in Nassau County. There is no cause for alarm, as we have not yet received any reports of human transmission.
Scammers are getting even more sophisticated as they target bank customers. They're not only spoofing bank phone numbers.
When they call the victim, they actually show their branch that they actually go to.
Broward Sheriff's Office Detective Pedro Cordero says they claim that they're from the fraud department of the bank, and people inside the bank branch are stealing money from accounts. They ask people to withdraw money or turn in a debit card and give it to a rideshare driver. If you get a similar call, he recommends hanging up and calling the 800 number on the back of your debit card, or even better, physically go to the bank branch and speak to someone. President Trump will deliver the keynote address at an AI summit in Washington, D.C. today. The summit is titled Winning the AI Race, and organizers say this will be Trump's first major address on the topic of artificial intelligence since the start of his second term as president. Reports say the president will unveil a sweeping federal AI strategy. There's been a recent spike in plastic piggy banks washing up on beaches along the Texas coast, and the only clue is that some have Spanish writing on them.
And it says, amor ahora, love is, and ahora, I think it means now, so love is now.
Texas A&M researcher Jace Tunnell found about a dozen of the so-called sea pigs this week near Corpus Christi. He posted about it on social media and said the response was shocking. Similar piggy banks are being found across the Gulf Coast, and some coming from Cuba's Bay of Pigs. But Tunnell said that they are also a tradition in Mexico, throwing piggy banks in the water. Billy Joel wants fans to know that he's feeling all right.
While appearing on Bill Maher's Club Random podcast, the piano man gave a health update after being diagnosed with a brain disorder known as normal pressure hydrocephalus. Joel told Maher he feels fine, adding his balance sucks. It's like being a boat. The 76-year-old was forced to cancel several concerts that he had lined up for 2025 through 2026. The condition leads to problems with hearing, vision, and balance. I'm Mark Mayfield.
WBSM Sports.
The Phillies beat the Red Sox 4-1 last night in Philadelphia. Both teams back at it tonight at 7:05. Veteran players for the Patriots reported to training camp yesterday. The first practice scheduled for this morning in Foxborough. New England opens the preseason on August 8th when it hosts the Washington Commanders.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
Starting off cool again for the South Coast as we wake up on this Wednesday morning. Sweatshirt weather is what I'm calling it, as we are in the upper 50s to start. But if you don't want sweatshirt weather, just wait a couple hours. We're going to warm up pretty quickly, and temperatures will be a little closer to average this afternoon. Most of us right along the water are going to be in the mid and upper 70s and the low 80s as you head inland. Plenty of sunshine, a couple clouds to make the sky interesting, and that's about it. A beautiful day here across southern New England. Now, as we head into tonight, it's going to be a little less cool, and then the heat starts to build as we get into the later half of the week. I'm ABC6 Chief Meteorologist Christina Schallhoop on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get breaking news alerts and all of our content on the WBSM app. This WBSM News update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
Welcome back in, 508-996-0500. A couple of other news stories from yesterday. We were getting some messages from people yesterday on the WBSM app, on App Chat, asking about what was, where was the smoke coming from in the Westport, Dartmouth area. Well, actually, and you can see it on ABC6, it was actually from Westport. There was a fire at the Excel Recycling Facility on Charlotte White Road. And it took 13 tankers from around the area to come and help put out this fire, dumping tens of thousands of gallons of water on it because there were no hydrants in the area. There were no injuries. But tankers and crews from Rehoboth, Rochester, Dartmouth, Tiverton, Little Compton, Freetown, Berkeley, Middletown, Raynham, Acushnet, Middleborough, and Lakeville all responded to the scene. And the fire department referred to it as a deep-seated fire involving a very large pile of recyclable materials. So in case you were wondering about that, we are waiting to get more information from the police regarding a shooting that occurred in Riverside Park last night. So hopefully we probably won't get information before I go off the air, but we'll have a few later on, you know, just because what time people check their emails that and handle that information when they come into work. But we will get you that as soon as we can. And also a very strange story the WCVB had this morning that 8 children were taken to a hospital last night after experiencing seizure-like symptoms in Cambridge. So this happened at St. Paul's Parish around 7 p.m., after receiving a call about a child suffering from a seizure while participating in a free choir event, the crews arrived and they saw that the child was sitting on the front steps of the building but was not actively seizing. But according to Cambridge Fire Chief Thomas Cahill in this WCVB report, that quickly escalated into 7 other people having seizure-like symptoms and they were all transported to hospitals around the Cambridge area. So during the performance, some of the children reported feeling sick from an odor and were showing seizure-like symptoms, and several students and adults reporting smelling odors in the odors in the building, but crews said they did not detect any out of the ordinary smells when they arrived. All of the children were between the ages of 11 and 13 and were originally from France. So Cahill said this was somewhat unusual. It was a routine medical call that quickly escalated into transporting 8 children to the hospital. Not common. But they went through the building and they found nothing. The building was ventilated. They found no signs of anything. And there were about 70 other people at the concert that were not affected by this. And the children all seemed fine before this happened. Very, very strange. Very, very strange. So we'll keep an eye on that story, too, because
I'm, you know, they don't speculate in this story what it might be, and I'm trying to rack my brain thinking about, you know, what it could be too. Obviously, if there is some kind of odor, it could dissipate by the time the crews arrive, but you would think there'd be some trace elements in the air if somebody had set something off, or if there was gas that was leaking out, or some other noxious fume. You think there'd still be some trace elements of it in the air. And in particular, you know, you had all of these children, 8 children that were all experiencing the same type of symptoms. And I don't know if there's anything to read into the fact that these children were all from France. They might have just all been in a group together, but the story doesn't get that deep into that part of it. But we will definitely keep an eye on that because it's a very strange story. And I'm sure we'll get more information on that through the course of the day today. 508-996-0500. App chat and open line voicemails on the WBSM app. The other big thing, of course, that we mentioned in the last segment was that they had a press conference on the fire at the Gabriel House in Fall River, determined it to be accidental, but they cannot determine the exact cause at this time. But they believe it's one of two things, either faulty oxygen machine or smoking materials. Being close to oxygen. And as State Fire Marshal John Devine said, he doesn't know that they'll definitely be able to narrow it down to one or the other. But they're going to keep investigating. The investigation is not over. And they are looking into the sprinklers, they're looking into the fire safety procedures, they're looking into all kinds of things. In addition to the state medical examiner's office is also doing autopsies on the victims and is determining the exact cause of death for each one. So there'll be more information to come on that. And another announcement that came down yesterday, the city put out a press release just prior to Mayor Mitchell's appearance on WBSM yesterday with Chris. He was on yesterday instead of today. In case you missed it, you can catch it on podcast. But they announced that the Casa de Ciudad Library was going to remain open. It'll just have limited hours. So instead of being open 32 hours a week, it'll be open 24. It's going to be open during what are the peak times for visitors, you know, patrons who have already been using it. They're going to focus on those peak times. They're going to have to divert some resources away from other libraries to do that. So some other branches are probably going to have shortened hours. But this will allow them to keep it open, and they're going to work toward digitizing everything that's in that library to make it accessible, whether you can go to the library or not. And I saw, I think it was in the, might have been the New Bedford Light article about it, that someone was questioning, well, if you don't have the money to keep the library open 32 hours a week, how do you have the money to digitize the archives? A lot of that will come from grants. There's a lot of grant money to be had for the digitalization of print archives. Because people want to see that information readily available, not just because in case the library does close again, but also because other people that will never physically make it into that library might want to have access to those materials, especially as being the nation's only Portuguese library. So you could see why that would be something worth having available to everyone. But I think you heard, I would say, a lot of positive reaction to this. Council President Burgo gave me a statement. Representative Cabral put out a statement. And, you know, they were both happy to see this be what transpired, but they also both emphasized that, you know, they want to see it open its full complement of hours as well, and that they want to find a way to work toward making that happen. I mean, I listen, I don't mean to sound insensitive, but I don't know that those 8 hours make a big difference. The 8 hour difference between what it was open currently and what it'll be open for going forward. 508-996-0500. Let me take a quick call here before I got to take a break. Good morning. You're on WBSM. Oh, hold on. Let me press that button. There we go. Now you're on WBSM.
I know. I didn't hear the bell.
That was my fault. I pressed one button and not the other.
All right. Good morning, Tim.
Morning.
Anyway, you know what bothers me about this, though? There's so much money coming in from the Portuguese feast. And really what I heard on the radio is that they gave $25 million in 100 years to scholarships, which is not even a drop of rain in a bucket. And they could help out with stuff like this, really. In my opinion, I know it's nonprofit, but there's millions of dollars that gets made there every year. Every year you figure it out, you can tell. And you know what? This has been going on for 100 years. And, you know, a lot of it gets funneled back to Portugal to help them. You know, it really, really goes through me sideways. I'm very sorry, people. They can call in, say what they want, but I'm sorry. And I think there should be a percentage of that money going to the city, period. But maybe we could fix the roads, or they should voluntarily do it.
Well, but
I just don't think it's right. I really don't. They've profited big time off of the city. You weren't here when it started.
But it's an event. Well, neither were you. It was 100 years ago. We're not that old.
I know. but I've been here a long time, and when I finally realized what is really going on, it floored me.
But that's a private event. Hold on. That's a privately run event that's put on private property. That, you know, why should they be responsible for giving more than their fair share of taxes as opposed to somebody else? You could just as easily say Market Basket should pay for it because they get to make millions of dollars a year being in New Bedford every year.
No, it's different. That's nonprofit. They're not paying taxes. It's nonprofit.
But it doesn't matter. So then make all the other nonprofits pay for it then. Why would one have to over the others is what I'm saying.
I think New Bedford, because they don't make millions and millions and millions.
What does that matter?
Because it matters, because that's greed. Just like the Prince Henry's not supposed to be there, and I don't know why the mayor keeps that flag up. Marge called in a long time ago. It's not the proper way to put a flag. They do not own. If they want to have ownership to all this, you know, all that they want to do, then stop putting in. It's not like they don't have it. Do you know what I'm saying?
I get what you mean. I think it would be hard to say for them to have to do it and not others.
I wouldn't do it. Personally, I would not do it. If I was making millions of dollars like that, and I was doing it in this city, and this city needed, it's a Portuguese library. If they needed some money, I would say, well, we have plenty here. Let's take it out of here and put it in the library.
And also, we don't know that they're not already donating to the library either. I mean, I'm going to have John on tomorrow. I can ask him.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's right. And another thing is that I'm part Polish. A lot of Polish things had to close up because there's no money. In fact, they took all the they ran right over the Polish people. We were here first on Cedar Grove Street. All over there was Polish people. You can't even find a Polish person hardly in this area. Well, I just don't think that I don't think it's right. They're very, very greedy. There's plenty, plenty, plenty of money. It really gets me fired up. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay. Well, I'll let you calm down. I got to take a break.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. All right. We got to take a break. We'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned. So this is probably a good time to be thinking about this here as we've got a little over a month to go, or maybe right around a month to go before kids start returning to school. If you are interested in becoming a school bus driver, a van driver, a monitor, they are looking for them for Trembly Bus Company. And with Trembly Bus Company, it's not just being able to drive kids to school and make sure kids get to school safely, but you also become part of the Tremblay family as well. And one of the great things about it is if you don't have your CDL, that's okay, because they are willing to train you if you're willing to learn, but also you can earn while you are training as well. You can get paid while you learn. So they're looking for school bus drivers, school bus monitors, 7D van drivers, CDL. They have a CDL training program. They're also looking for school bus mechanics right now as well. So if you want to find out more about how to become any of those positions, well, you can go to their website, tbcbus.com for Tremblay Bus Company, tbcbus.com. There's an online application there that you can fill out. Or just stop by their main office at 284 Myrtle Street in New Bedford, Monday through Friday between 9 and 4. And tell them, hey, you heard about it on the radio, you're interested in one of these jobs, and you'd like to apply for the position. Because nothing's more important than getting kids to school safely, and why not do it? If you've got the motivation to do it, why not do it? Make sure those kids get to school and also earn a nice paycheck for yourself as well. Whether it becomes your full-time job or whether it's just something for extra money or just get you out of the house. Either way, tbcbus.com for Tremblay Bus Company, tbcbus.com. All right, I got one more break. I got to get in here before the end of the hour. We'll be right back. All right, we are going to be going into the news. When we come